So I've been asked to speak about Nadab and Abihu, and like in previous weeks, we're trying to answer the question, does it matter to God? So if you're familiar with the story of Nadab and Abihu, then you know that it did matter to God. So, and I agree, it did matter to God. So we've answered that question. We can all go home. Now, I'll start in Leviticus chapter 10, and I'll read that for you, and then we'll talk a little bit about Nadab and Abihu. Now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it and laid incense on it and offered unauthorized fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And fire came out from before the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. Then Moses said to Aaron, "This is what the Lord has said. Among those who are near me, I will be sanctified, and before all the people, I will be glorified." And Aaron held his peace. And Moses called Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Uzziel, the uncle of Aaron, and said to them, "Come near, carry your brothers away from the front of the sanctuary and out of the camp." So they came near and carried them in their coats out of the camp, as Moses had said. And Moses said to Aaron and to Eleazar and Ithamar, his sons, "Do not let the hair of your heads hang loose, and do not tear your clothes, lest you die, and wrath come upon all the congregation. But let your brothers, the whole house of Israel, bewail the burning of, that the Lord has kindled. And do not go outside the entrance of the tent of meeting, lest you die, for the anointing oil of the Lord is upon you." And they did according to the word of Moses. And the Lord spoke to Aaron, saying, "Drink no wine or strong drink, you or your sons with you, when you go into the tent of meeting, lest you die. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations. You are to distinguish between the holy and the common, and between the unclean and the clean. And you are to teach the people of Israel all the statutes that the Lord has spoken to them by Moses." Moses spoke to Aaron and Eleazar and Ithamar, his surviving sons, "Take the grain offering that is left of the Lord's food offerings, and eat it unleavened beside the altar, for it is most holy. You shall eat it in a holy place, because it is your due and your son's due, from the Lord's food offerings, for so I am commanded. But the breast that is waved and the thigh that is contributed, you shall eat in a clean place, you and your sons and your daughters with you, for they are given as your due and your son's due from the sacrifices of the peace offerings of the people of Israel. The thigh that is contributed and the breast that is waved, they shall bring with the food offerings of the fat pieces to wave for a wave offering before the Lord, and it shall be yours and your sons with you as a due forever, as the Lord has commanded." Now Moses diligently inquired about the goat of the sin offering, and behold, it was burned up. And he was angry with Eleazar and Ithamar, the surviving sons of Aaron, saying, "Why have you not eaten the sin offering in the place of the sanctuary, since it is a thing most holy and has been given to you that you may bear the iniquity of the congregation to make atonement for them before the Lord? Behold, its blood was not brought into the inner part of the sanctuary. You certainly ought to have eaten it in the sanctuary as I commanded." And Aaron said to Moses, "Behold, today they have offered their sin offering and their burnt offering before the Lord, and yet such things as these have happened to me. If I had eaten the sin offering today, would the Lord have approved?" And when Moses heard that, he approved. With the events surrounding the death of Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, we scarcely need to ask, does it matter to God? Their demise was so swift and apparent before all the children of Israel that it was, and still is, obvious that their transgression did matter to God. Tonight I'd like to examine the error of Nadab and Abihu and understand why did it matter to God. Before we jump into Leviticus chapter 10, we should understand the context of the book of Leviticus. The first seven chapters are God's instructions to Moses for the children of Israel regarding the various offerings and sacrifices. We can infer that this took place following the construction of the tabernacle and its articles, because God gave these instructions to Moses from inside the tabernacle. Chapter 8 details the consecration of Aaron and his sons to the service of the priesthood. Moses received these instructions, the instructions for this ceremony, from God on Mount Sinai in Exodus chapter 29. Chapter 8 is Moses' execution of these instructions. During this time of consecration, the priests were not to leave the door of the tabernacle for 7 days. They were each washed in water by Moses and dressed by him in their priestly garments. They all took part in the sin offering of a bull, the burnt offering of a ram, the consecration offering of a second ram, and a wave offering which consisted of part of the ram, of the consecration offering, and some cakes and wafers of unleavened bread. They laid their hands on the head of each of the animals before they were sacrificed. They were all anointed with oil and sprinkled with blood, as were the instruments of the tabernacle. All this was for the purpose of consecrating them for service in God's temple. Tabernacle. I'm going to say temple a lot, but not on purpose. I mean tabernacle. It was a long, solemn, detailed, and bloody process. The intricacies of it were dictated by God to be carefully executed by Moses. 10 times in chapter 8, we see the phrase, "as God commanded Moses," or something to similar effect. So what was the purpose of this process? It was to set apart Aaron and his sons as acceptable for service in God's tabernacle. They could not serve there first without an offering to atone for their sins. Then the burnt offering to please God, a pleasing aroma. Then finally, the consecration offering, which they themselves were to take and eat part of, as a portion of it was waved before God, presented to God, and then burnt and consumed by fire. In chapter 9, on the 8th day, after the 7 days of consecration, we have the beginning of the duties of the priesthood. Moses calls the people together and instructs Aaron to make a sin offering and a burnt offering for himself again. Then to make a sin offering, a burnt offering, a grain offering, and I believe 2 peace offerings for the people. Through all this, Aaron is only assisted by his sons. After this, the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people, and fire came out from before God and consumed the offerings on the altar. This caused the people to cry out and fall on their faces. All this context is important because I believe it helps us understand the events of chapter 10 a little better. Chapter 9 and 10 both take place on that 8th day. Previous to this study, I'd imagine the demise of Nadab and Abihu to be somewhat of a standalone account intended as an anecdotal warning to those in priestly service to God, as if just one day while Nadab and Abihu were doing something at the temple, they ran afoul of God's rules, and either overzealously or because they were drunk, offered the wrong thing. In reality, this took place during a watershed moment in the history of the children of Israel's interaction with God. Nadab and Abihu had been assisting Aaron, but really they hadn't done anything else at the temple. The only part that they really had in the 7 days of consecration was they laid their hands on the animals to be offered. Moses would hand them part of the wave offering. They'd wave it, and then Moses took it back from them and put it on the altar. So Moses even dressed them and washed them when they were doing that. So they had no part as priests up until this point. This was day one of tabernacle worship, and it culminated in the loss of half of the priests of Israel. Minutes, or possibly even moments, after God shows his acceptance of their sacrifices by sending his own fire to consume them, he shows his displeasure with and rejection of Nadab and Abihu by that same fire. Both of those things were readily apparent and visible to the children of Israel. So what did Nadab and Abihu do wrong? Was their sin one of overexuberance, spurred on by the pomp and circumstance of the day? Or perhaps it was just a simple mix-up based on their stupefied state? One preconceived thought that I had before all this was that maybe it was just the that the operations of working in the tabernacle had become mundane to them. Not the case. This was their first day on the job. This was not accidental. This was not an overreaction by God. This was not something that they were well-intentioned and just got it a little bit off the mark. Not at all. Their sin was one of presumption. Let's look at verse 1 of chapter 10. Then Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it, put incense on it, and offered profane fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. All through chapter 8, as God commanded Moses. All through chapter 9, Moses was instructing them on what they needed to tell the people to bring to them, how they needed to handle it, what they needed to do with it. And then the first thing that Nadab and Abihu do was something that God had not commanded them. All through the process of consecration in chapter 8, we see it repeated. Moses was doing as God had commanded him, and not just generally, specifically, wash with water, right earlobe, right thumb, right big toe, dab with blood. Burn these parts on the altar. Burn these outside the camp. You can eat these. If you're not done, burn what's left. Nadab and Abihu were going beyond what the Lord had commanded. They presumed that they knew best how to worship God, and they did it in front of all the people. In doing so, they not only dishonored God before all the people, but also undermined Aaron as the high priest and Moses as God's messenger to the people. After their death, Moses told Aaron what God spoke. By those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy, and before all the people, I must be glorified. Nadab and Abihu sought glory for themselves by innovating God's prescribed methods of worship. I don't want to get hung up too much on the profane fire or the unauthorized fire too much. My best guess is that they used fire from the fire that they were supposed to be cooking some of their portion of the offering with to burn the incense. Instead of fire from the altar, as they were supposed to do in the normal burning of incense. But I do think it's worth noting God's commands regarding the incense that we find in Exodus chapter 30. The Lord's prescribed recipe for incense was not to be made for any other purpose than use in the tabernacle. They could not make it to use it themselves. It was to be considered sanctified to the Lord, and if anyone even mixed up a little bit of it just to smell it themselves, they would be cut off from Israel. God is not to be worshipped with common instruments or by common methods. The writer of Hebrews calls the articles involved in tabernacle worship copies of heavenly things. Although they were copies, they were still not of human conception, nor are there any other prescribed modes or methods of worship. God expects his people to worship him the way that he chooses. The way we worship matters to God. I listened to Mike's class from 2 weeks ago, I think, today. I don't know how many times you said, the way we worship matters to God. I think that's that really is the number one takeaway from this lesson, is the way we worship matters to God. I'll go ahead and pause and ask for comments if you have any so far. In offering unauthorized, profane, or common fire before the Lord, Nadab and Abihu presumed that he could be worshipped with something common, even though they themselves had been sanctified, set apart, and made uncommon mere hours previously. They went through all those offerings through the 7 days in the tabernacle, through having the blood dabbed on them and being sprinkled with blood and anointed with oil. All those things were to set them apart from just regular men. And then they thought that they could take something that was just common to them, was just normal, not prescribed, and use it in God's worship. Can you imagine going through the week-long consecration process and then thinking, this doesn't matter to God. We can just do this any old way. In their attempt to worship the Lord with profane fire, they failed to regard him as holy. Again, look at what God says in verse 3. By those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy. Before all the people, I must be glorified. At such a critical point in the history of the children of Israel, it's easy to think that God may have wanted to make an example of Nadab and Abihu. Ananias and Sapphira also come to mind. Their sin was also committed as a pivotal juncture for God's people, a time during which the way for God's people to access him had changed. Their sin was apparent, and their punishment was apparent and swift. The deaths of Ananias and Sapphira also created a stir among those who witnessed them. However, we must not let our impression of the severity and swiftness of God's punishment in either case diminish the egregious nature of the offense. That is to say, we can't assume that God came down on them extra hard because their infractions were novel or their negative example was needed. The sin of Nadab and Abihu, as well as the sin of Ananias and Sapphira, were bold and raw affronts to God, and received his fair and righteous judgment no matter how high profile their punishment wound up being.
Adam, I appreciate your reminding us that it was not from the mind or the hand of God, and that's what made it common or different. And when we look at the way that the church is described in prophecy, it's the rock. Jesus was the rock that was not hewn by human hands. He came to us from God. He was God. And his church was established on that knowledge that he was God. And no man had a part in establishing that church unless Jesus gave them the instruction and the authority to do so. No man took upon themselves the authority to establish the church or to change its way that it operated. And I think we see that same thing here, underscored.
when you were talking about, well, let me see, in verse 11, we were supposed to, well, sorry, in verse 10, you were distinguished between the holy and the common, and between the unclean and the clean. In verse 11, and you are to teach the people of Israel all the statutes that the Lord has spoken to them, to Moses. I'm reminded of the Sadducees and the scribes, the Pharisees, in Matthew 23, the seven woes. As Jesus basically outlines, you were supposed to do these things. Here's what you're doing instead. And I see lots of similarities between exactly what was happening to Nadab and Abihu and how they were struck like this all of a sudden, and how Jesus is now striking them and saying, listen, I'm calling you out. You're not doing what you were supposed to be doing, and your responsibility is to be teaching the people correctly. I'm going to teach them now.
Adam, I think the thing that I kind of get from this also, since you mentioned the Cain and Abel lesson earlier, one thing that strikes me about that is you mentioned like the severe consequence of the disobedience, but the thing that sticks out in my mind is, again, these people are not heathens. They believe in God. Moses is speaking directly to God. They're not removed, maybe like where we have God's word today. They had direct communication with the Lord, and then you spoke about Ananias and Sapphira. Same thing there, too. They're literally with the apostles in the establishment of the church. I mean, this is God's will playing out before them, and they have that direct line of communication. So there's no confusion about what the Lord's will is, but we see that they deliberately disobey. And that's why worldly people may say, well, the consequence seemed pretty severe, the punishment was severe, but you have the lawgiver, you're eyewitness to the lawgiver himself, and you still disobey. So I think we see the punishment is right.
Yeah, two comments in response to that. As to the consequences are still there today. They're delayed. So I think just the idea or the fact that they were immediate is what is so startling sometimes. And then Nadab and Abihu had to have known like what they were messing with. They went partway up the mountain with Moses. They went partway up Mount Sinai with Moses. So they witnessed God. And I mean, and then to just kind of, you know, play fast and loose with the rules. It's disappointing, but it's also like, you know, how have I done much differently than that in my own life?
It's interesting. Aaron loses two sons, and he loses them immediately. And then Moses has to turn around and give him a warning. Don't start mourning. Don't hang your head. It was meant to happen. You know, don't do the things you would normally do by losing two children. You pick back up and go on, because that's my judgment. That's the way it is. I just think that's it's two men died, but the living had to go on with things, almost as if it hadn't happened, because God wanted it that way. Pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, and I'll get a little bit more on that in just a second. It was critical that they went on.
Yeah, let me follow that up, Adam, to say that what did Nadab and Abihu learn? What did they learn? They were dead, right? So, yeah, it's punishment, and you focus on that. But they were
tabernacle, you know, don't let your or take your hats off or anything. Like, they had stuff to do. Now, in my mind, it seems acceptable or expedient to go ahead and say, his son's just died. Go ahead and mourn for him. You know, we'll pick back up where we left off. But they were consecrated for that. They were in process of worshiping God, of atoning for the sins of the children of Israel, and they couldn't just stop because these two messed up and got killed. They had to keep going on. Exactly. The high priest was forbidden from, the regular priest could touch the body of a close relative, immediate family. The high priest could not touch a body.
I'm reminded of the story of Uzzah, who reached out to grab the ark, just thinking I'm just going to help out, and the results were the same for him. And that's where society, I think, has lost total sight of the true nature of the Almighty. They see him as a loving, gentle, grandfatherly type who would allow that to happen. Well, there's two sides to God. There's the loving side and the justice side. And society has forgot about the justice side. God cannot be God unless both parts are there and present.
I was thinking the same thing, Paul. Where had the ark been? Right? Where had it been? And maybe on the way back, you know, they're thinking, well, the rules have changed, right? Ark's been here, it's been exposed, and other people have touched it, so it's not the big deal it used to be.
So Moses, verses 4 through 7, I just want to kind of handle as a big chunk. I've already talked a little bit about what's in my notes. But I just call this the funeral of Nadab and Abihu. So God tells them not to touch the bodies. They'll be made unclean. Aaron is prohibited from touching bodies, period. Or corpses, period. And so Moses calls these other men, these relatives, to come and take the bodies away outside the camp. Moses also forbids Aaron and his remaining sons from mourning for Nadab and Abihu. For Aaron and or his surviving sons to assume a posture of mourning while ministering in the tabernacle on behalf of the people would have been to defile themselves. They were set apart and sanctified for a specific purpose at that time. They were performing a sacred service for all the people before the Lord. They were wearing sacred garments. They were anointed with sacred oil, setting aside their consecration for this task to engage in something as something common and, understand my meaning here, unholy, as in not holy as God is holy, as mourning would have been similar to they themselves offering profane fire before the Lord. They would have been setting aside what the Lord had commanded them in order to satisfy their feelings, to do what they felt was reasonable, what they felt was expedient at the time. They would have been telling God, this is more important right now than what you want us to do. It was imperative that they maintain their composure because they were responsible for offering the sacrifices for all the children of Israel. If there were no priests, there were only two priests and one high priest left, there would have been no sacrifices to atone for the children of Israel's sins or to please God. This is why Moses tells them that if they fail, God's wrath will fall on all the people. However, Moses does allow the whole rest of the nation of Israel to mourn. It's interesting that he doesn't tell them to mourn for Nadab and Abihu or mourn that they lost half of their priests. Moses tells them, bewail the burning that the Lord has kindled. They were to mourn that an offense had been committed that provoked such wrath and punishment from God. They were to mourn that God had been grievously offended by those who were intended to serve before him. In this, Moses is trying to keep them focused on what they have had before them. Yes, an error had been committed to briefly interrupt their worship of God, but that did not let them off the hook, and it did not postpone anything. The very last we hear of Nadab and Abihu is that they're carried by their relatives out of the camp. We don't know what happened with their bodies after their relatives carried them out of the camp. At that time, it would have been tradition for all dead bodies to be taken outside of the camp. There were no in-town graveyards back then. But I do think it's notable that the Bible mentions in Numbers as well as 1 Corinthians that Nadab and Abihu died childless. God not only killed them for their offense, He cut them off from his people. They left no heritage or inheritance, only their example. Based on what we read in verse 8 of Leviticus 10, we can infer safely, I think, that Nadab and Abihu were influenced by alcohol and their sin before the Lord. Here God pronounces a prohibition on the consumption of alcohol by the priests during their duties within the tabernacle. The punishment for violating this prohibition was death. It is to be noted here that God makes this pronouncement directly to Aaron. Before this, God had relayed his instructions through Moses. Whether it was because God desired to drive his point home by addressing Aaron directly, or because Aaron was now sanctified and ordained as the high priest, and he had seemingly been presented before God by Moses at the end of chapter 9, I don't know. I don't know exactly why. God gives two reasons for this prohibition. The first is that alcohol clouds their discernment between the holy and unholy, clean and unclean. During their service before God within the tabernacle, it was critical that they remained clean. We talked about that a little bit already. This was a difficult undertaking as they dealt with the carcasses of offered animals. Their job was not as easy as slitting the throat of a small animal and throwing it on a fire. In some cases, it involved nearly completely butchering an entire large animal and handling the viscera. Their duties also involved the handling and consumption of things which were regarded as holy. In verses 12 through 17, Moses of chapter 10, Moses instructs them how to handle and eat their portion of the grain offering and the goat of the sin offering. These were not things which could be handled flippantly or partaken of lightly. I think it's important that we recognize what happens in this last part of chapter 10. This is still the same day. Moses goes and looks for the sin offering, and he finds that it's all burnt up. They didn't eat any of it. Moses confronts Aaron about this because they didn't partake of it like they were supposed to. Aaron tells them that he was concerned after the death of his sons, that the manner in which he consumed the sin offering might not be acceptable to God. I think that's important. This explanation seems to be satisfactory to Moses. Failing to make these distinctions of what is holy before God and what is not would have been perilous for the priests. We already saw that. A similar failing of discernment, seemingly affected by alcohol, contributed to the deaths of Nadab and Abihu. The second reason that God gives for prohibiting the consumption of alcohol by his priests in the tabernacle is that it inhibited their ability to teach the people the statutes that govern their worship and conduct at the temple. All the children of Israel had a responsibility to know and teach God's laws to their offspring. However, it was the responsibility of the priests to teach by word and example the things that pertained to the offerings and worship at the temple, or at the tabernacle. The type, quantity, and quality of the offerings brought to the priests was extremely important. The priests needed to teach the people what was acceptable to be brought before God. The conduct of the people was also important as they came to worship at the tabernacle. Again, it fell to the priest to teach acceptable conduct when it came time to worship God at the tabernacle. The consumption of alcohol while they performed these duties would have impaired them, and especially in their example. While no similar explicit prohibition exists that is applicable to us as Christians, I think we can extrapolate God's given reasons for this prohibition and make some applications. Anything which clouds our discernment of what is holy should be approached very carefully if not completely avoided altogether. Alcohol, drug, medication, whatever it may be, we are responsible for discerning holy and unholy, clean and unclean in our own lives. This is especially critical when we come together to partake of the Lord's Supper. We are partaking of our sin offering, just like Aaron and his sons were supposed to do at the end of chapter 10. Look at what care Aaron took when he was concerned that he might partake of the sin offering in a way that might displease God. Our attitude and our spiritual posture before God as we partake of the emblems of Christ's sacrifice are so critical. Sobriety is the absolute lowest, most basic baseline for us as we partake of those things and throughout our worship. I don't even think it needs to be said to us. Additionally, we should not allow our ability to teach God's word, both by word and example, to be inhibited in any way. Again, I think this goes beyond just the excessive consumption of alcohol. There are drugs, both medical and recreational, that have entered into social and legal acceptance that can and will inhibit our ability to be ready in season and out of season, both with our words and with our example. Let me sum up very briefly. How we worship God matters. We worship the same God that prescribed the methods and means of worship that we find in the book of Leviticus. He holds our worship to the same high standards. The same consequences for us exist. Fire. We must worship God in the ways that He has told us. We must only worship God in the ways He has told us. Priests. How we conduct ourselves before Him matters. What we might deem acceptable or expedient does not matter. Thank you for your attention.